Hello, everyone, and welcome to Full Time, where we take you around the world of soccer, locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally. Full Time is presented by the Game Sports Podcast and powered by 91 Network. You are listening to Season 4, Episode 14 of Full Time. I am your host, Daniel Scarpino, and with me is our co-host, Gaetano Gallo. Before we begin today's show, Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. With their two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, you can download and access the Pizza Portal app so you can enjoy a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. We remind our listeners that recordings of Full Time occur weekly or bi-weekly, and uploads to all of our platforms for public viewing and listening occur weekly or bi-weekly as well. Folks, we take this opportunity to welcome you back to Full Time, where we get our fix in the world of soccer. G, we are here together on this Friday morning as we record on Good Friday. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well, Scarps. Happy Good Friday. That's the right, like, it's Happy Good Friday, right? It's not one of the... So Happy Good Friday. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. It's peaceful outside. It's quiet. It's one of those few days in the year that not too much is open and there's not a whole heck of a lot to do. So yeah, I'm chilling and things are going really well, and I'm looking forward to our show here today. And in our show today, we are going to be talking about Europe's Big Five, the FA Cup, and the Euro 2024 playoff qualifiers. As always, if anyone would like to listen to our previous content, please check us out at Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. And without further ado, Gaetano, and to everyone who has taken the time to tune in here today, let's kick off. We begin today's show by diving straight into Europe's Big Five. We're going to start with La Liga, and La Liga in Spain has changed, but only slightly. It remains Real Madrid at the top with 72 points. However, Barcelona have now jumped up to second with 64 points. Girona moved down to third with 62 points. Athletic Club have moved into fourth position, bumping Atletico Madrid to fifth for the time being. Gee, some subtle changes in positions 2 through 5 there. What can be said right now for Spain's top division?
Yeah, not going to lie, it's a little disappointing to see Girona kind of falling out of that title race completely now. I'm pretty sure that the fairy tale dream is over at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, Barcelona's kind of turned their season around a little bit, playing pretty well domestically and in Europe. So I'm not surprised to see them finally, you know, to see it finally all click. You know, we knew it was just going to be a matter of time before that happened. And also Athletic Club, kind of surprising, taking that fourth place spot. Typically, you know, you just kind of assume Atletico Madrid, you know, play in a Champions League spot every year. It'll be interesting to see how they react, considering they're also in the quarterfinals of the Champions League as well, see how they react and see if they can get in there for next year, next season as well.
Yeah, definitely some interesting things there. And I think between now and the next time that we record in a few days' time, you'll probably see another change in there again, and definitely between now and the end of the season. In Serie A, Inter still lead the way with 76 points. Milan is second now with 62 points. Juventus is third with 59 points, having dropped 7 of their last 9 possible points. And Bologna holds fourth with 54 points. Gee, is Juventus slipping, or are they just in a poor run of form here?
I think it's a bit of both. You know, some turmoil off the field, some turmoil on the field. Typically, they go hand in hand. It's just a really poor time of season to kind of have this little bit of a collapse. Top of the table, I don't think there's much of a title race at this point. I think it's basically Inter's. I'm pretty confident in saying that. But I am super excited to see kind of the race for the last Champions League and European spots, because there are some really good teams and it's pretty tight down there.
Definitely. And I'm loving what Bologna is doing. Thiago Motta, he's doing a fantastic job as manager. And he had some crazy ideas years ago about management. And he's there now, not doing too many crazy things, but he's got his team playing. So it's pretty solid. In Germany's Bundesliga, Leverkusen are maintaining the gap at the top by 10 points over second place Bayern. Stuttgart and Dortmund round out the top 4. Gaetano, was just announced a matter of 2 hours ago. We're recording here at 11:30 a.m. on this Good Friday, so 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. It was announced that Xabi Alonso is going to be staying at Bayer Leverkusen next season. So it's number one, a huge thing there. And I would love your opinion on that. And second, are Bayern now looking purely at the Champions League?
Yeah. So first of all, I think, you know, if like Bayer Leverkusen winning the Bundesliga this year is massive, just like slightly less massive, like just by a hair, is Xabi Alonso saying for next season. Not that they're going to do this exact same thing again next year, but, you know, keeping him in charge means that there's a very good possibility that they could make another run at the title. They're going to be playing in the Champions League next year. Like, that's huge news for them. Also, like, outside of the Bundesliga, a bit in the Bundesliga, like, there's a lot of big teams that kind of had him on their shortlist looking for a manager, and now he's off the market. So that's, you know, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid. So I think it's, you know, not just doesn't just affect the Bundesliga. It affects, you know, the whole of Europe, which is crazy. You know, again, we wouldn't have said that at the beginning of the year, that, oh, like, Xabi Alonso staying an extra season in Bayer Leverkusen is going to be this big. It's wild. And I think Bayern Munich at this point have to focus on the Champions League. There's nothing else, unless Bayer Leverkusen, you know, fall off a cliff here in these last few weeks. Yeah, that's all hope is lost in the Bundesliga. They have to focus on the Champions League. They have to win it. And I mean, if Thomas Tuchel wants to stay in a job there, like, kind of has to, right?
I would think so. And, you know, one of the guys that I play with, he made a great point. This was a couple of weeks ago when we went out for a drink after one of our games. And he said, you know, Xabi Alonso needs to stay at Bayer Leverkusen. And I agreed with him. And I said, well, what are your reasons for why you think that he should stay? He goes, if you think about most younger managers that have gone to, quote unquote, big jobs too soon, typically doesn't work out for them. And then he brought up the whole Graham Potter thing with Chelsea. And it's like, you know, I even thought about it. I'm like, well, where has Graham Potter been? You know? So yeah, you don't want to jump too soon, but he's got a good thing going at Bayer Leverkusen. Xabi Alonso does. And I think it's great that he's staying. And like you said too, I think Bayern Munich now are purely looking at the Champions League. In Ligue 1, PSG have increased their lead at the top to 12 points over second place Brest. Monaco is third. Gaetano, we have PSG. We gave them a little bit of stick last show, but a dominant performance in their previous game, and with now 12 games remaining, your thoughts on Ligue 1?
Yeah, they've basically got it wrapped up at this point. Similar to Bayern, really, the focus should be the Champions League. They should be able to kind of rest some key players, and you know, you never want to, you know, demean your domestic competition in that sense, that, you know, you're going to play your B team in the league. But they really should be at this point. There's not a lot to talk about in France at this point of the year, typically.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, like you said, squad rotation for PSG is probably going to make most sense. The relegation battle in the Premier League has officially changed up. Nottingham Forest have been deducted 4 points due to the league's profitability and sustainability rules due to financial fair play regulations and overspending. And thus, their deduction of those 4 points puts them into the relegation zone unless the club's appeal is successful. Forest, Burnley, and Sheffield United are all in the bottom three, with Luton Town now being outside of the relegation zone by just a single point. What does this mean for Nottingham Forest? Because they really haven't been in the drop zone, I don't think, maybe since the very early part of the season. But with this 4-point deduction, they're now in there officially.
Yeah, I think it's tough. They've got a tough run of games to see at the end of the season here. You know, I don't want to disrespect Luton here, but I don't think it'll take, like, I don't see them winning very many points. I don't think Forest are going to have to win too many points over this last little stretch to escape. But you know, if, you know, one or two results, the next two results kind of don't come your way, and then all of a sudden it's, oh, like, we have single digit games left and you're needing those points, I think it could end up very badly for Forest here.
I would think so. And, you know, we talked so often previously about Everton's 10-point deduction, which was then reduced to 6 after the appeal. So obviously Forest are going to appeal this. Do you think that those 4 points are going to get reduced? Do you think that they might win the appeal, or do you think that those 4 points are going to stay?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm not a finance or law expert, so it's you know, even when I'm reading the you know, the transcripts, like, it's not the most clear. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm going to know everything about it. But what I will say is, at this point of the season, the Premier League have to kind of get that result, like that appeal, out very quickly, right? Like, it's not something like cities that can take time because it's, you know, charges from years and years and years. So I think we're going to find out very soon regardless, and kind of see how it goes. For the sake of entertainment, I would maybe like to see the point deduction stay and see a little bit more, you know, drama in the relegation battle. But also, that's kind of really shitty to wish a club to, you know, be relegated because of a points deduction. So, yeah, it's kind of a bad situation all around.
Yeah, and to your point with where this season is time-wise, I don't have it down to the exact amount of days, but you're looking somewhere in the ballpark of 6 weeks, give or take, 6 to 7 weeks. So this would have to be sorted very quickly. Everton's situation did not seemingly go very quickly. So I don't think that this one's going to go super quick either. So I would imagine that the 4 points probably are going to stay. And I did look at Nottingham Forest transfers from last year, and we talked about it on our show extensively. And they brought in and signed like a ton of players. They had a huge roster. And so this kind of does make sense that this would all happen. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they brought in like you could build a full 11 of players they had brought in in that last summer. So like, yeah, not surprising, but it's also just like, it's wild that the Premier League kind of allows it at that point and then like brings it back later and says, actually, you weren't allowed to do that. Like, to me, that's a little stupid, but you know.
Yeah, it's almost like a blockade should be there that, like, I know in the NBA, NHL, things like this, like you do have a salary cap, like you can only spend but so much in these types of things. And you almost wonder, I don't think that soccer would ever have a salary cap per se, but you almost wonder if something's going to be put in place in the future just to kind of avoid these sorts of very strange circumstances. Something that's not strange in terms of circumstances, though, G, is the top end of the Premier League table. Because right now that sees Arsenal and Liverpool joint top with 64 points. And Arsenal only edge Liverpool on goal difference at this moment in time. Manchester City is third with 63 points. Aston Villa remain fourth with 56 points. Tottenham still chases them in fifth position. Gee, there's some massive games coming up here in the Premier League. And the run-in is going to be absolutely wild. Your thoughts, sir?
Yeah, this is kind of slightly big game this weekend, I would say. But I mean, at this point of the season, you know, given where City and Arsenal are, like there's no small games left. You know, everything's a big game. I've heard, you know, City players talk about it basically since kind of Pep came in. The mentality he's installed is like every game's a final. And that's, you know, as much as it's like a trope to kind of motivate the boys, like it's very true at this point. Like you lose, you know, the game this weekend is a final. Like this could decide the Premier League title. You drop a point against, you know, even a lower table team, like that could be detrimental. So yeah, it's the best part of the season by far, but it's going to be exciting and very nervy one.
I would agree with that. And like you said, anytime you drop points, you almost get a little bit nervy. And I did say a few shows ago that in these final 10 games of the season, I didn't think that Liverpool, Manchester City or Arsenal would be perfect in the final 10 games. I think that there's points there to be dropped, but at the same time, you really can't lose or draw too many, because when you have quality teams around you, you know that you can be punished. And one of those big games, as you're alluding to here and now, is this Sunday, March 31st, between, incidentally, our two teams, Gaetano's Manchester City and my Arsenal. So what we thought that we would do here, folks, on our show is something that we've never done on Full Time before, and that is a combined 11. Everyone's kind of seen these with teams historically or teams in the Premier League or between two big teams. So what we're going to be doing here is we are going to be choosing a combined 11 between Manchester City's current Premier League squad and Arsenal's current Premier League squad. And the rules that Gaetano and I have agreed to are as follows. We will choose one goalkeeper, four fullbacks, excuse me, five midfielders, and one striker. We will be able to select any player from either team, regardless of their fitness level or injury status at this moment in time. So we're just going to assume and presume that everybody is fit to play. And if we cannot come to an agreement on a player, we will be using Opta Player Ratings Analyst to determine which player gets into the team. So, G, this might be the first time in about 17 months of doing this show together, almost a year and a half, that we're going to come head-to-head and maybe have this agreement Are you excited for this one, sir?
Yeah, should I run like the Bitter Rivals intro here and like get going? Like, what are we saying? It's gonna get heated.
It just might. Oh, we've known each other for over a decade. We've never had a heated conversation or anything of the sort, but today might be the day. So we are gonna get the ball rolling here. We're gonna see what happens. So we're coming in peace, but only relative peace, of course. So G, you're gonna pick the first one, and that is of course gonna be in goal. So G, who is your pick to start for? Out of these two teams, who's going to start between the sticks?
So honestly, when I looked at it, like, there are four really good goalkeepers, two for each team. Obviously, Ederson and Stefan Ortega for City, Raya and Ramsdale for Arsenal. I don't think there's really a bad choice there, but in my combined 11, I'm going with Ederson. I think he's not only the best shot stopper, but he's also, he can distribute, sweeper keeper. He's kind of integral to how kind of I see a team playing now at this point. So I will take Ederson, 27 matches this season, 8 clean sheets, only 25 conceded. I think he is the best of the four goalkeepers.
Yeah. And I was looking at it as well, with Arsenal's goalkeeping situation this year, you had some people who were disgruntled about the Ramsdale situation and bringing Raya in and things like this. And you know what? For life, when it started for Raya at Arsenal, it wasn't so good. It's going good now. But if you wanted to take somebody who was, historically proven, solid, won things, calm, collected, again, good shot stopper, distribution, unbelievable, somebody that you could really rely on, you'd have to say Ederson. So humbly, I do agree that it's going to be Ederson who's going to be the goalkeeper in our combined 11. So far, one Manchester City player, and he definitely deserves that. And next, we're going to go to right back, and I'm going to start this one out here. And I wish I didn't have to do this purely because, I feel like Ben White right now is playing some of the best stuff in the Premier League, and that's my personal opinion. I know there's some weird things going on with the England squad and him not wanting to be there or something or other, but if we were to do this next season, definitely two seasons from now, I think that I would have a much different opinion. But if we're going to pick it on reputation, grit, athleticism, and just pure faith that you're just going to go out and get a job done, regardless of like tactical scheme, I'm going to have to go with Kyle Walker. And again, it's only just because I think Ben White is playing unbelievable, but I'm going to go Kyle Walker. G, what's your pick here at right back?
So again, another tough one. It was obviously between White and Walker. Really was no I don't think you guys have a like your backup right back's not anything.
So typically it would be Tomiyasu, yeah. But Tomiyasu could also play left back and center back, but we don't have like a backup right back. It would be Cedric Suarez, and he doesn't play, so
yeah. So at City it would be Rico Lewis. He's still very young, tons of potential, but he's obviously nowhere near the level of White and Walker, so he was kind of out of the debate there. And yeah, I just think, obviously, I'm going to go with Kyle Walker. You hear what players like Vinicius Jr. and Neymar and Mbappe say about playing against him, how he's, one of the best in the world. He very rarely, is making mistakes against those guys, keeps them pretty quiet when City play them. I think he's just everything you want. Like, he's just everything you want in a fullback. Rapid, solid defensively, chips in a bit on the offense, super reliable. I think he's, just incredible.
Yep. And it's obviously doesn't have much to do with international play, but again, England also trust him. He's a good player there as well. So I think he has to go into the team. So two City players so far. And now we're going to go to center backs, Gaetano. And I think that this one's probably going to cause a little bit of debate, and probably for good reason, because we've got a lot of options here between both teams, might I add. So you're going to take the lead on this one, and you're going to pick two center backs. You go ahead, sir.
Yeah, if you ask me to just pick two starting center backs for City, there's a debate. So you add Arsenal's quality center backs in there as well. It's pretty tough. I decided the fair way was I need to go one City and one Arsenal player. So for Arsenal, I'm going to go with William Saliba. I think he's just fantastic. Still so young, still so much room to grow. just solid. He's, just like not... It's weird with center backs. There's like not a lot of ways to describe them. Like once you get past, like, he's just solid. He does his job really, really well. Like, and that's the best you could ask for your center back. And I'm going to pair him with John Stones, who I think is the best center back in the world at this point, has been for the last year and a bit. I think the two of them together, I don't know how they would play together. I think they play a little too similar-ish, but that's not the point of this. It's because we're picking the best two, and I think they are the best two of the center backs.
And what's so interesting is that I have the exact same, but I actually put them in reverse order. So I put John Stones first, because if I had to pick a center back, to be perfectly honest, he would be the first one on my team sheet, if you will. And then I also have William Saliba. Some interesting things with Didier Deschamps, the French manager, coming out and saying that he doesn't like some of the things that Saliba does. Now, I don't know if that was just psychological to try and get into his head and to make him play even better. But Saliba is a very good young center back. And I think sky's the limit for him. And John Stones, absolute, like you said, solid. He could do everything, calm on the ball. And I mean, he's done so many wondrous things for City down the year. So I think those two as a center back pairing, although they are similar, they are the two best center backs that we could have picked. So we do, in fact, agree there as well. So finally, we got an Arsenal player in that four. And we're going to go to left back now. And, you know, again, reminding everybody for the criteria for this, that it's anybody in the two Premier League squads between Manchester City and Arsenal, regardless of their fitness or current injury status. So believe it or not, I'm actually going to go with Jurrien Timber here. And in my opinion, I think he's a top class defender. He could play multiple positions, but for Arsenal, in the little bit that he did play at the beginning of the season and in preseason, and again, that's a very small sample size, but he looked an absolute beast and a proper left back, even though he could play right full back and obviously center back. But I think that if you put him in this back four here, I think he's going to put in your tackles. He can be a stay-at-home guy. He can invert into midfield. He can pick a pass. If you need him to get forward on set pieces, he can do that as well. And I'm going to go with him because I do feel like this position for both teams, admittedly, is probably a little bit up for grabs. So I'm going to go Jurrien Timber, even though right now he's not fit to play. G, your goal.
Yeah, so I actually also picked a Dutchman. I just happened to pick Nathan Ake. You know, a £40 million signing from Bournemouth. Bournemouth was, you know, kind of widely seen as, you know, an overspend and, you know, kind of, you know, what was he doing at City? And he's very quickly turned into one of our most consistent players for the last 3 years. Just, he can do everything. He can bomb up and down the wing. You know, he's solid in the air. And really, when I looked at the Arsenal squad, I didn't realize Timber could play left back. I thought it was basically Tomiyasu and Zinchenko. And when I was looking at the three of those, Ake, well, because I didn't count Sergio Gomez. He was just not, right. He's just not at that level. But when I was looking at Ake, Zinchenko, and Tomiyasu, I thought Ake was kind of clear of both of them. But yeah, Timber, I guess we're going to go to the Opta player ratings, right?
We are, and that's exactly what we're going to do. And that's what we said, and the rules that we agreed on was going to be the sort of the breaker, if you will, if we had a disagreement. And to the player ratings on Opta player ratings analyst, the one that is higher is Nathan Ake. So Ake actually is ranked a lot higher than I thought. So he's at 79.8. And I think because probably Timber hasn't played too much this season, he's actually only ranked at 67.8. So a little less than 10 points from Ake. But it's not a bad shout that Ake gets into this. But what I will say is that if there's going to be one position on the pitch that you think, we're going to probably want to try and protect that with quality players around it, it would be left back. And that's interesting to say because Arsenal and Manchester City are both very quality teams. But that's the tiebreaker there. So Nathan Ake is getting in the squad. So now we're going to go to midfielders. And Gaetan, you're going to take the lead on this one. And how we've done this, folks, is we're just selecting five midfielders because we can play in any sort of midfield system that we want. Two brilliant managers between Pep and Arteta. So we're just going to go for five midfielders. We could pick and choose whoever we'd like. And Gaetano's going to pick his five. And then I'm going to go. So G, the floor is yours, sir.
Yeah. So I've changed my mind about a million times about this. And like, as I'm looking at both lineups still right now, I'm changing my mind. So I'm going to do something where I'm going to start with my wingers, because I'm pretty confident with those. I'm going to go with Saka on the right and Phil Foden on the left. I think they are just the two of the best players in the league, you know, regardless, whatever kind of metrics you want to look at, they are two of the elite players. You have to have them in this combined 11 for sure. The center of the park is when it gets kind of tough. So you have to have Kevin De Bruyne in there in your 10 or your, you know, roaming eight spot. the best midfielder in Premier League history. Kind of speaks for itself. And then the last two is when it gets really tough. And this is something that I was kind of hoping would have happened last summer. But I think, you know, a pairing of Rodri and Rice in midfield with, obviously, with KDB in front of them would be just absolutely stupid. So, yeah. And again, there's so many good players missing out here, like Bernardo Silva, even Martin Odegaard. Like, there's so many good players missing out. But I think that's the best five possible that you could build there.
And you know what? Everyone who watches this episode is going to be looking for, punches in footballing terms being thrown here. I have the exact same. And I have the same. So this was only up until maybe a day. Two days ago. I actually didn't even have Saka in. If you want to know the truth, I had Bernardo Silva in. But then I looked at it and said, you know what? For what he's done for the past couple of years in not as good of a team as Manchester City, admittedly, and for what he can do potential-wise, I just edged him over Silva. But I've got Saka, KDB, Rodri, Rice, and Foden. So we have the exact same midfield five, and it's probably for good reason. And I also considered putting Odegaard in, but it was only for a very short period of time. And the reason why I didn't is because he's not 100% proven yet. Somebody like Rice, Rodri, they are. But again, I don't think you can have a team where you leave out Foden or Saka just because of their young prowess at such a young age and how good they are. And then obviously the three in the middle, I mean, they almost speak for themselves, but like you said, some good players being left out of there. And, again, for good reason. And we're going to go to striker now to round things out. And, this one, you know what? I'm going to have to go with Eddie and Nketiah. You want to know the truth? So, I think this one speaks for itself. Erling Haaland is going to start up front for this combined 11, one of the best strikers in the world. G, what are you saying?
But I do want to shout out, if I can find him, his stats page here. Julian Alvarez has actually had like a quietly phenomenal year for City. 8 goals, 8 assists, and 26 starts in the Prem. Just over 2,200 minutes played. For, you know, what he's kind of considered as the backup striker. Like, those are really great numbers to be putting up. And obviously super young as well. But yeah, obviously Erling Haaland starts. Like,
it's a no-brainer. And you know what? Even Havertz, he's starting to grow into his own now a little bit here and there. But Arsenal really doesn't have an out-and-out striker at this moment in time. And actually, you know, I made that joke about Nketiah. I actually don't mind him as a player. He hustles, he works. I don't think that's going to be... I don't think that he's going to be, you know, Arsenal's player for the future type of thing. But so I think Haaland, of course, is an easy pick. So to review our 11, and we're going to do that now. We have Ederson in goal, Walker right back, Saliba and Stones at center back, Nathan Ake at left back, a midfield five combined of Saka, Kevin De Bruyne, Rodri, Rice, and Phil Foden, and then Erling Haaland up top. Gaetano, that's ridiculous 11, and in that you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You've got 8 City players, so only 3 Arsenal players. But again, such a what an 11 that is, isn't it?
Oh yeah, like that is, you know, the things I would give up to see that 11 play an actual game together would be, you know, like that would be probably one of the best ever teams assembled. I'm gonna throw that out there. You could even have, you know, Pep and Arteta on the bench because, you know, they work together at City. I think they could coexist there. Yeah. And then, yeah, no, I think that's, I do feel bad that there's not a lot of Arsenal players in there, but that's just kind of, you know, the quality in both squads. Like there's just, you know, outside of left back, there's, yeah, you know, world-class players in every position. And, you know, we could both rhyme off a second 11 of the players that didn't get in there and it would still be, you know, absolutely stupid. So, I'm pretty happy with that combined 11.
I am too. And again, only really one disagreement there with the left back position. And it's not that I even don't like Nathan Ake, because I do think that he's a good player. But I think anybody you kind of put at the left back position, it's that, like I said, it's that one position on the field where, you know, both teams probably would want to be a bit more solid. And I think Arsenal have decent options there, but nothing that's solidified. Like Zinchenko, he's kind of in and out of form. You know, you never know what kind of player you're going to get. Yurian Timber, he's been injured all season. Tomiyasu, he's been injured, but when he's playing, he's good. So yeah, it's definitely a tough one, but that's the 11 there. And it's on to the biggest game of the season. And that is between Manchester City and Arsenal, which goes this Sunday, March 31st at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. So on Easter Sunday, get to watch an amazing, amazing game, or so it should be. And how ironic that it comes between our two teams, G, but may the better team win, and good luck to you, sir.
Good luck. Do you have a score prediction, Scarps?
Do I have a score prediction? Yes, I do, and I think that's probably good that you brought that up there. I'm going 2-1 Arsenal. I think that Arsenal are going to go to the Etihad, and I think that they're going to get the job done, and I think the last 15 minutes are going to be incredibly nervy, incredibly ugly, but I'm going to say that Arsenal get over the line with a 2-1 victory. What are you saying?
I'm going to go 3-1 to City, with the third goal coming very, very, very late to kind of round things out. I think it's going to be a very close game for the most part. And then as Arsenal push in those last, you know, 5-10 minutes, City will kind of get the insurance goal. But yeah, I think 3-1, I think it's going to be a phenomenal game. Yeah, I mean, like, as much as I'm looking forward to it, I am dreading it, Scarps. Like, this is, you know, like we said, the most fun time of the year, but also the most nervy time of the year.
Now, I'm going to ask you this one. And actually, the 3-1 scoreline, City seems to have picked up quite a few 3-1s lately. So that does actually make sense. I'm going to ask you this one, and only because I've been thinking about it as an Arsenal fan. Would, right now, if someone said to you, the game's going to end in a draw, would you take that?
Yes, I think I would. Mostly just because that means you guys don't gain ground on us. You know what I mean? Like, it's you know, we're both gaining the 1 point. You're not going 2 or 3 clear. We're not, you know, falling behind those 2 or 3. I think I would take a draw. I wouldn't prefer it. I would obviously much rather the win, but yep. I think if you offered me a draw right now, I would probably take it.
And here's what I'm thinking about it too. Let's say that this game was played at the Emirates, especially just because how that sort of atmosphere has changed this season. I would actually say I couldn't take a draw, because I'd imagine that Liverpool is probably going to get 3 points and then go back. So I would say that Arsenal would have to win it, but because they're going to the Etihad, and because we're going up against a very good City team, I would say going into the game, just don't lose. Just don't lose. So if you get a draw, I don't think it's the end of the world. But then obviously the last 9, you got to be as close to perfect as possible. So if someone offered me a draw right now, I would take it. And on our next show, we are going to be able to find out the result of that game and talk about it a little bit more. So exciting times ahead, but also a little bit of nerves.
Yeah, just a few.
Yeah. Just a few nerves, but for good reason. We'd rather be in this position than we would any other position, mid-table or, you know, wherever Chelsea are. Or haven't seen this is Carpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you're listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the 2 locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. The FA Cup quarterfinals have wrapped up not so long ago, and the semifinals are set and ready to go. G, how did you enjoy the quarterfinals of the FA Cup?
They were insane. Like, just, I feel like that's where we have to start, was they were absolutely insane.
Yeah, it was a spectacle to see, especially as a neutral fan. And what we're going to do here is we're going to review each tie for all of yous here and now. First, it was Wolves and Coventry who matched up for what was a beyond entertaining battle and an even more fascinating finish to the match itself. After Wolves took a 2-1 lead in the 88th minute, it was Coventry's Ellis Sims who leveled things in stoppage time in the 97th minute before Hadji Wright would go on to win it in the 100th minute and thus send Coventry to the FA Cup final, defeating Wolves at their home ground by a score of 3-2. Gaetano, what a gutsy effort there from Coventry to never give in, and what a performance on the day. Please speak to their performance, because you did pick this game spot on.
Yeah, that was, I think, like, to me, like, that's like a contender for like game of the season, just yeah. Like in across all of Europe, any competition, like that was nuts. You know, Wolves get the late go ahead goal and you think, okay, like that's it. They've gone, they've won it, you know, Coventry get the equalizer, all right, extra time, and then like 100th minute you get the winner, you know, away too. I, as much as I love like scoring like a late, like this, like someone scoring a late winner at home, like scoring it away is just so much better, you know, when the home crowd is silent and just that one pocket of away fans is losing their minds, it's just the best. And yeah, this game was just incredible. What I would say, it's crazy to also say that this probably isn't the best game of the quarterfinals either. Like, that's like the most insane thing to me. But yeah, super, super fun game. Very happy with the result, obviously, in terms of my prediction. But also, I just love seeing, you know, lower league teams in FA Cup semifinals. You know, we always talk about the magic of the cup, and that is, you know, exactly that right there.
Well, and that's exactly what was on my brain then and there, just the magic of the cup, that you are going to have a championship side in the semifinal of this competition at Wembley. Absolutely brilliant. Manchester City welcomed Newcastle to the Etihad. It was Bernardo Silva who netted twice for City as they beat Newcastle by a score of 2-0. Gee, your City looked quite sharp in that contest. They confidently and professionally get the job done. Your analysis here.
Yeah, I'm very happy with that game because that had the potential to go kind of both ways, where Newcastle put up a good fight and it's a, you know, a slugfest for 90 minutes, you know, separated by a goal. But City kind of took it up a level, were very comfortable. Bernardo Silva, obviously, the two goals were great. Yeah, he's very comfortable. It's very much how you want City playing in March, you know, when it kind of comes to the end of the season. You know, no major risks were taken. Like, it was just a very professional performance. It was very good overall. I liked it.
Yes. And again, a result that we thought would happen and did happen. One of those exciting games that you're referring to is this one here. And that was Leicester City, who made the journey up to Stamford Bridge to take on Chelsea. With things level at 2-2 and Chelsea playing with 11 players to Leicester City's 10 due to a Callum Doyle red card, it was two late goals from Chelsea's Carney Chukwuemeka. I think I've said that correct. I don't know if I have for sure, but
I'm not going to make fun of you for the pronunciation because I wouldn't do any better.
Yeah. And Nani Madueke. Those two lads got the final two goals. That would push the home side Chelsea through the FA Cup semifinals, as Chelsea do win by a score of 4-2. Gee, the red card really put a damper on things for Leicester, and we just gave Chelsea a bit of stick and poked some fun at them a short minute ago there. But they're into another semifinal of a cup competition, even though they're having a poor season. What can you say here?
Yeah, so I'll start with the red card. I thought it was deserved. There really was no argument there. Obviously disappointing in terms of kind of the flow of the game and kind of how it shifted it for Chelsea. But yeah, they kind of actually played decent football at that point, you know, something they haven't done a lot of this season. So I'm not overly shocked that with that type of performance against 10 men, they got the job done. Yeah, they kind of, yeah, like we said, like they're sitting 11th in the Prem right now, which is, you know, great for us, not great for them. But they've been doing surprisingly well in cup competitions, which is just an interesting kind of dynamic to see.
It is. And something else with the dynamic there, I don't have the reports in front of me, nor do I know if they're 100% true or not. But rumors right now that Todd Boehly might be out at Chelsea as chairman. So it's something that we'll have to keep an eye on as the dynamic at Chelsea continues to be ever changing. Manchester United hosted Liverpool at Old Trafford in what was an instant classic for the ages. Needing extra time after the score was level at 2-2, Liverpool's Harvey Elliott would get them ahead in the 105th minute. However, United's Marcus Rashford would equalize with just 7 minutes 7 minutes later, rather, before United's Ahmad would win it in the 121st minute for United by a score of 4-3. Gee, an absolutely wild game here and thrilling beyond belief. I was so happy to be able to catch that on the comfort of my couch. What could you say in terms of speaking on this contest?
So I had it up while I was recording Bitter Rivals with Avery. And not in the interest of watching it. You know, obviously I hate both teams and, you know, would rather have seen them both lose. But I was like, I should watch this, you know. There was just that gut feeling that like something was going to happen. Like this wasn't going to be like a boring, you know, 1-0 or 2-0 victory. Like this was going to be, there was something about this game. And I remember we were recording and I'm looking at the score and it's 2-1 pretty late for Liverpool. And I'm like, all right, you know, like comfortable. Nope. Equalizer. Like, okay. We'll see a bit of extra time. And then they go ahead in extra time. You're like, wait, there it is. Another equalizer. Like, oh, all right. Guess we're getting a penalty shootout. And then like, as we finish recording, I like look up and they're on that 2-on-1 break. And I was like, there's no way.
Yeah.
And then he scores. I hate the yellow card for taking the shirt off. It's the stupidest rule in the game. It's like, but yeah, that was one of the most, actually probably the most insane game I've seen this season. The ebbs and flows, the peaks and valleys. It was just like football drama at its finest.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't like to hype up Old Trafford because it's a awful stadium. But like they call it like the Theater of Dreams, and like that's exactly like I hate that it played right into that like so much, like it hurts. But like, yeah, Theater of Dreams, you know, you get the, you know, the theater of that game. It's just brilliant. Just brilliant. As much as I hate the result, brilliant.
Yeah. And you know it's a big one when everyone's talking about it still a week after the fact. And you know, we're recording here on March 29th. Like this game is it almost seems so long ago, but people are still talking about it in the media. And yeah, it was an instant classic. So loved watching it as a neutral fan, even though I don't care much for either team. So to review, G, you got half of your picks correct as Leicester and Liverpool faltered. I went 3-for-4 as Wolves sort of let me down there. So in the spirit of our selections, we're almost back to normal after our previous Champions League selections where we both only went 50% in those. In this case here, we go collectively 5-for-8, which is 63%. So we're starting to get back into a proper rough form here, G.
Yeah, you know, that was just a rough patch, you know, a bit of, you know, mid-season, you know, we're fine. We're turning the corner now. It's marked. This is when we pick it up and we start going for it.
Got it. We're always typically around that 75, 80% mark. You said it last year. I remembered two halves of a perfect footballing brain. That always stuck with me. So on we go. And we are going to cover this in a future show, G, but the semifinals will consist of your Manchester City going up against Chelsea and Coventry up against Manchester United. So, G, just your general thoughts here on these two fairly awesome semifinal matches and the potential of possibly having a rematch of last year's final again this year.
So I'll start with the City-Chelsea game. Scares the daylight out of me. They have been kind of a bogey team for us this season. And now in a knockout game at Wembley, terrifies me. I do think City are going to, go through, obviously, have that confidence in them, but it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a fun 90 plus minutes. And then on the other side, I very rarely want United to win games. I would love to beat them in another FA Cup final. Like that, if you could go like back to back beating them in FA Cup finals, I talked about how like last season, like winning the treble is like the highest peak I'll ever see as a City fan. Like it's all downhill from here. Like back-to-back FA Cup final beating United, like that's pretty close. Like that's, you couldn't script that much better. But also at the same time, if they lost in the semifinals to Coventry, that would be just hilarious. And I would love that, equally. So I'm kind of okay with whichever result we see on the other side there. As long as City go through, I think I'll be pretty happy.
Fair enough. And, it's going to be, in my opinion, too fantastic semifinals. And you have to wonder, again, all the talk about Manchester United right now. Let's say, for example, United don't get to this cup final given the season that they've been having. You'd probably have to think Ten Hag's out the door. Would you agree, or do you think he has to stay next year?
You got to give him more time. You got to give Ten Hag more time.
Long term, eh? The long term project.
You have to look at the long term, Scarps. Give him 10 more years.
10 more years. It'll be interesting to see, but like I said, on a future show, we are going to cover those semifinals here and exciting times ahead for what's going to go down at Wembley. The Euro 2024 playoff qualifiers have just finished up. And now, as a result, we are all set for a summer of footy as all 24 teams in the competition have been determined now that the playoffs have concluded. Gaetano, does it feel a little bit more real now that Euro 2024 is truly around the corner, seeing as we know all 24 teams that are going to be in the tournament?
Yeah, like whenever I look at the lists and you see like at the bottom, it's like this team or that team, this team or that team. And so I was like, the tournament so far, but now you have like the finalists, like these are the teams playing, like you know what you're up against. Yeah, it's starting to feel really real, and I'm super excited for it.
Yeah, me too. And I can compare it right now at this exact moment in time to what I'm sure a lot of people are watching. I know I am, and that's what I'm going to be doing all afternoon, all night, is watching March Madness. And, I love basketball and the whole bit, but, when you do see that the 16 versus 16 seed have to play each other to see who's going to get into the tournament, it's like, okay, yeah, the tournament's a few days away, but it's not there yet. But then once that 16 seed qualifies, it's like, okay, it's on now. It's officially March Madness. So I'm with you now in the sense that we know the 24 teams that are there. We could really start shifting our focus towards that and knowing who everyone is going to play. So with those playoff qualifiers having just finished up, we will take you all through the journey that those three teams who have officially qualified and rounded out the groups for this summer's Festival of Football. In Path A, Wales and Poland met up in the final after they both respectively breezed through their semifinals. In the final, after a goalless 120 minutes of football, it needed penalties to decide the winner. And it was Poland who came out victorious on the end of it, defeating Wales by a score of 5-4 on penalties. Gaetano, Poland get through to the Euros in dramatic fashion. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this was, in my opinion, probably the best game of football of these last qualifiers here. I thought Poland were really good, really solid. Wales put up a hell of a fight, even with down a man with the red card. But yeah, ultimately, I think that little bit extra quality of you know, a player like Robert Lewandowski kind of, you know, and that also like rubs off on the rest of that team, kind of just put them over the edge here.
Yeah, and I was looking at Poland's squad too, and I mean, anybody can end up in a playoff. We saw with Italy how many times over the past many years. Like, you could have good players in pretty decent teams end up in a playoff, but I'm glad that Poland get through because they're always a proper footballing nation, so they're through to the Euros. In Path B, Ukraine and Iceland matched up in their final after they were both relatively comfortable in their semifinal victories. It was left until late, but a Mykhailo Mudryk goal in the 84th minute would see Ukraine over the line and into Euro 2024 as a result. Ukraine defeats Iceland by a score of 2-1. Gee, Ukraine didn't have it easy, but they do get it done in the end. We were watching some of the extended highlights after one of our games, my team and I, after we went for a drink after one of our games there. And just to see the emotion pour over all of Ukraine's squad, their coaching staff, their fans, unbelievable to see. What can you say here?
Yeah, this is probably my favorite kind of result in a very long time in kind of any terms of sports, just for all of the, you know, not footballing reasons with Ukraine and kind of what they have been going through these last few years. Just, you know, like you said, to see the relief, the emotions, you know, I think that's just, you know, this goes like beyond sport. I think just that nation as a whole kind of needed this little bit of a boost, as much, you know, as much as it doesn't really mean anything, it does mean everything, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's nice to see that. And also the game was also like pretty good. So like kind of putting our like blinders on and just look at the football, it was a very good game. Pretty well taken goal for a player who has not been a goal scorer very much this season. Yeah, I thought it was just a very, very entertaining game. And obviously the result was fantastic.
Absolutely. And I would have loved, I mean, I kind of started, everyone kind of fell in love with Iceland at the Euros. What year was that?
2016.
Yeah, everyone kind of fell in love with them then just because of like the Cinderella story. So I would have loved to have seen them back there then. But to lose out to Ukraine with, again, some very talented players in that squad. I think Zinchenko captained them on the day, yeah, which was great to see. So again, Ukraine do go through to the Euros, and so many people, and for good reason, are happy about that. And in Path C, Georgia and Greece would battle things out to see who would qualify for Euro 2024, as they both claimed clean sheets in their semifinal games. The final between Georgia and Greece was also goalless and needed penalty kicks to decide things at the end of 120 minutes with the score level at 0-0. And in the end, it was Georgia who got the better of Greece on kicks from the spot, defeating them by a score of 4-2 on penalties. Gaetano, little known fact here, I didn't even know this. Georgia qualified for the Euros for the first time ever. If you could, please explain what this means to them for the upcoming tournament.
Yeah, like this is, you know, this is massive. You know, very small country. You know, this is probably the first time in a very long time, or at least that I can think of, that they've had, you know, a legitimate superstar, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name because I still can't, but he's the winger for Napoli. Yep. You know, it's nice to see him, you know, being able to lead them, not just, you know, in kind of meaningless friendlies and, you know, Nations League, you know, relegation playoff games, like all that kind of nonsensical stuff, but to actually lead them to not just through this qualifying campaign, but to actually qualify through. It feels very much, and it's not the exact same, but it feels like when Canada qualified for the World Cup for the first time since, what, it was 50-something, 58?
Right.
That excitement of, like, we are going to be competing on, you know, the biggest stage. And obviously there's a slight difference between the Euros and the World Cup. Like, I'm not going to say they're exactly equal. But, you know, that's a very, very good step for them, you know, in terms of footballing. It's a great step for them as a nation to be able to say, hey, like, we can go and play in these tournaments and, you know, belong, really. Yeah. And, you know, what you hope to see is that kind of progression. And maybe we won't see it for 10 or 15 more years, but, you know, this, you know, these young kids that are watching now, seeing their heroes, their, you know, local heroes playing at a European Championship, and then kind of the progression of the football in that country, I think it's just great all around. The game was kind of dull, but, you know, that's besides the point.
Well, you know what? You summarized that beautifully. And you know, you want to take a look at this sport and sort of the wonders that it does. We just spoke about Iceland, how they came out of nowhere back at the Euros in 2016 there. You want to take a look at even Morocco this past World Cup. Not that they're a bad team by any means. They have plenty of quality players, but they did kind of come out of nowhere. And then obviously when Greece won it back in 2004, unbelievable then too. So I would have loved to have seen Greece get back here, but the story for Georgia is just so big. And like you said, it's going to do wonders in the world of football for so many different reasons. And to review our picks, G, you thought that Bosnia and Herzegovina, Georgia, and Finland would qualify. So you went 1-for-3. And I managed somehow, just purely on gut instinct, to get all three of my picks correct. I did say Poland, Ukraine, and Georgia. But, Gatito, what we have here, along with gut instinct, is that the data isn't always 100% clear with these situations, because with these countries, and it's no disrespect to them, they're maybe smaller footballing nations. So with Poland, Ukraine, and Georgia going through to the Euros, for these countries that are going through now, what does this mean for them? And do you think that maybe they have a legitimate shot once they get there?
I mean, in tournament football, like I very rarely will say a team has no chance, you know, in tournament-based football. I fully believe Canada was going to win the World Cup. Like, you know, like I was all in on that train. So, like, I do believe, you know, that when these players get to that, you know, that group stage, it's okay, like, you need to play well in three games. Like, that's it. It's not, you know, you don't have to focus on winning the final when you're playing your first game. You just win, you know, play your first game. All right, great. You get your 3 points. Now you're that much closer to qualification. Like, it's not, you know, it's not rocket science and how to get out of that group, right? It's not, it's, you know, what is it, 270 minutes of football?
Something or other.
You know, it's about that. Like, every team has that same 270 minutes of football to, you know, to qualify. Anything can happen. You know, we've seen, you know, the craziest things. You know, how many times have we seen Italy crash out of the group stage of a Euro World Cup, right? You know, the group of death. Like, how many times does, you know, the group of death actually see the two best teams go through? Like, it's not like that. It's not as easy as picking, you know, the best squad on paper. That's the whole point, is you actually play the games. Obviously, if it was on paper, you know, there'd be no point playing the tournaments. But yeah, I think all three of these teams have, you know, a chance of winning this tournament. You know, is it as good a chance as Germany or England or France? Probably not, but like, crazier things have happened.
Most definitely. And, you know, like you said, all you need is one moment, really. You want to take a look at the last Euro 2020, which took place in 2021. Denmark only got one win in the group stage, but then managed to get to the semifinals, right? Yep. And then when you take a look back, I believe it was 2016 when Portugal won. And I'd have to be fact-checked on this, but I'm pretty sure apart from the semifinals, Portugal tied every single game and needed to, in the knockout stages, go to penalties. And then in the final, won it an extra time as well. So, like, they basically drew their way to a final, if you want to call it that. But you do what you need to do to get over the line. And like you said, you only really need a moment. So anything can happen in tournament-based football, and it is so exciting for what is ahead of us. So with summer inching closer and closer, we do have that clear understanding with the of those 24 teams that are going to be represented at this major tournament. And a reminder to all of our listeners that Euro 2024 will kick off on June 14th. It'll be here before we know it. And as always, you can be sure to get all of your Euro 2024 updates right here on Full Time as we cover this tournament in detail. And we will cover it in detail on our future shows. This is Daniel Scarpino and Gaetano Gallo, and you are listening to Full Time on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. A reminder that Full Time is sponsored by Little Caesars Pizza. You can download and access the Pizza Portal app for any of the two locations in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Have a delicious hot and ready pizza from Little Caesars today. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Full Time. As we bring today's show to a close, we want to thank you all for spending a little bit of time with us on this Friday morning to talk about the beautiful game. G, always a pleasure, my friend.
Yes, thank you for having me as always. Maybe isn't the most beautiful day out there, but it's a beautiful way to start my day. So happy to get the chance to talk to you, especially before the City Arsenal game, lay down some peace offerings kind of before the game. So when it comes and the, whatever the aftermath is, either way, that it's not not too hostile.
Got it. And I'm definitely looking forward to discussing that City Arsenal game next week. And that is when our next episode will take place. A reminder to our listeners that the next episode of Full Time will be recorded the week of April 1st, 2024. And in that show, of course, we will discuss Europe's Big Five and a big highlight there of the English Premier League, the Champions League, the Europa League, and we will also dive into some local and regional soccer. As always, we'll keep everyone in the loop with all of the happenings in the world of football. For weekly content, make sure to hit like, follow, and subscribe to all platforms of both the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Podbean. For Gaetano Gallo, my name is Daniel Scarpino, and thank you for tuning in to Full Time. We look forward to seeing you at kickoff next time back here on the Game Sports Podcast and 91 Network. Happy Easter weekend, everyone. My best and our best to all of you and your families. Best always.